This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Industrial AI Podcast. My name is Peter Seeberg and my guest today is Tom Schneider. He's the CTO at Trumpf Machine Tools. And Tom and I are going to talk about applying industrial AI at Trumpf. Hello, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for inviting me for this unbelievable, exciting topic. And coming from the HMI in Hanover, I feel proud to talk about industrial AI in machine tools.
Very good, yeah. The time we broadcast this, HMI, the Hanover Mess, is probably a couple of weeks back, but I'm then in that case I was there as well, very much looking forward to what you learned relating to industrial AI. Now, for those listeners of you that maybe also follow the OPC Foundation podcast, you may have already heard the first part. Tom and I did an interview about a month back. For those of you that did not, Tom, please introduce yourself to our Industrial AI podcast listeners.
Yeah, so I'm the current CTO of Trumpf Machine Tools, responsible for all development in our portfolio from the NCK, which is deep in the heart of the machine, until the cloud. So the full stack and development there, and over the technologies, Trumpf Machine Tool Providers, we are the technology leader in the industry of sheet metal production. So we build up machines which cut metal, which bend metal and weld metal, and we put all these together in smart factories and support our customers over the life cycle with additional services and all which is needed in development across the globe is under my responsibility. And therefore, I'm from background machine tool builder. So I studied mechanical engineering. And in the last years, I tried to transform and disrupt myself, becoming more digital native. And therefore, I had the opportunity to talk about open standards and open COA.
Right.
And today, the next level of machine tool building.
Sounds good. Before we get into the AI part, maybe you want to tell us a little bit more about at a higher level about Trumpf. So you are in charge as CTO of the machine tools. There's other sections. I mean, the laser is, I believe, separately. Maybe there's two, three other things that you want to share with our listeners.
Yeah, for sure. So Trumpf is a technology leading family owned company, globally active in the three main pillars, I would say, machine tools, as mentioned. Mm-hmm. And smart factories, solutions for mostly family-owned businesses who are in the value chain of industry providing sheet metal parts. And the second pillar is laser solutions, everything which you can build out of lasers and the corresponding software and sensors and optics, providing solutions for e-mobility, for the automotive industry, for the pharmaceutical industry, for the overall electronics business. So everything which can be cut, welded, or deposited with laser light, including additive manufacturing and others. And the third pillar is we provide solutions in the semicon business. Mm-hmm. And the most, I would say, worldwide known technology is the extreme ultra-rare light, violet laser solutions we provide together with Zeiss and ASML, but there's also, we have strong electronic parts going into the solar business and also photonic parts going into VCSELs, into the mobile phones of the future and today. So I would say a broad technologies, always cutting edge, latest technologies and providing solutions for our customers from family owned to OEMs.
Very good. Thanks for that. So today we're concentrating on the machine tools. As you said, you studied machine engineering, I believe. So for those listeners that are not from that specific area, tell us, what is a typical machine tool? What is a typical application for machine tools?
So I would say the most impressive one and which enables a lot of discussion today is cutting sheet metal with laser light. And especially we have there one technology system, which we call the TrueLaser Center 7030. It's a machine where you put in a laser sheet, which is 3 to 2 meters with different material thickness. And then you move the sheet and you cut parts out of it, like at Christmas, if you do cookies and Christmas, and you have a certain contour, you have a certain way how the end product should look like, and you can cut it with laser light that you get it out of the sheet. And the specific item and why sheet metal is so interesting also from an AI side is you have to optimize that you put as much different parts and from one thickness onto one sheet metal, and then you cut it because you would like to avoid material and to be wasted. Right. And then you have to handle it and sort it and bring it to the next step in the manufacturing business, which can be then bending or welding or just produce it, ship it to other customers. So I would say sheet metal, and we do the machines for it, for this industry. And the amazing thing on this machines or on the industry is sheet metal is a sustainable material. It can go everywhere, from building technologies to cars to heavy metal equipment to ships to furniture. So I would say it's from the industry applications our customers solve with our machines, it's close to unlimited.
Sounds very impressive. And you already mentioned, so you sell the machine, so let's call that the hardware, I guess. And I assume that there is included or on the side of those machines software as well. And maybe in addition then to the hardware and software, services as well that go with it, or?
Yes, so that's perfectly summarized. It's our solution scope. So historically, we are 100 years old as a company. So I would say historically, we provided machines. Then we started to add for our customers the application software, enabling the machine to produce more precise, to better prepared, which we call the indirect processes too. So the production programming, production planning. And over the last years, we not only provided this classical service, which every machine tool builder supports his customer with spare parts, service technicians. And so that was, I would say, the first level of services. We have these kind of services globally in every country. We deliver machines. But in the last years, we additionally further out rolled servicization products, digital services, monitoring our machines, getting our customers a service app that they can get into contact with us over an end device, which gives transparency, which allows for calling for help with getting technical guides. So we build up the first, I would say, global reachable ecosystem from hardware, software, and services.
Sounds great. We'll get into some details later. At the very end, I want to talk about a very specific business model, which I believe you have been talking about as well in the past. But one question, you mentioned the applications, the industries. What industries can I imagine need and use your hardware, software, and services?
So there are in the supply chain of the automotive network, there are different layers of suppliers. And our machines are always on the last mile, we call it. So it's family-owned businesses which provide small parts to fasten things simply subsystems where multiple sheet metal parts are connected to each other that the car can be built up later. So it's subsystem delivery, or it's furniture, or it's kitchen housing for kitchen equipment. So it's, I would say, wherever you see sheet metal as an end customer in the value chain, our machines have been used. But maybe just to give also the use of AI, that is maybe the beside the fascination for the industry, for the use case. It's whenever you cut a part, it must be handled and taken to the a position where it can go into the following process step. So it's a material handling, which is directly connected to our machine. And that is one of the first applications which we have done using AI, was supporting our customers in the machine, and that they can get the right parts into a production order after a sheet metal was cut. And that is because it's a combination of vision technology, the software which enables the machine to cut the part and to bring this, I would say, sensor fusion together. There is one of our first use cases where we use AI.
Let's look at that in more detail. You had a press conference just a week or two ago, I believe you called it InTech. And from that event, I picked up the quote, "We want to be the leading supplier of AI solutions in our industry." So let's look at what you have today. You already started, and maybe we stay with that example. And then maybe later on, look at, you know, how you plan to stay or how you're going to change also tomorrow. So if we say what you have today, embedded hardware, software solutions, maybe we go one step deeper into the example that you just gave. What makes it AI if you say that your customers are handling or already at the design phase of what it is that they want to produce? Where does the AI come in? What does it do today already for your customer?
So if you look in the process chain, there is a designer at somewhere. He was using a CAD program and he had the idea that he has to design a specific part. And the first element where we have designed solutions, and you can find this in, as a service, a software as a service product in the web, it's under Optimate, that is where you drop the design of your idea of how you think mm-hmm. part should be designed, and then AI-based algorithm gives you several different optimized views of the question you have. It could be CO2 optimized, it could be weight optimized, or it can be production optimized. So how to produce it better, cut it, bend it, and weld it, for example, or take it out of a tube part. So it is the first, and most of the applications we currently think of using AI is giving assistance in the process of our end customers. And the first, and from our perspective, most promising part of using of AI is in the design phase, doing manufacturing feasibility, doing material optimization, doing CO2 optimization. And their algorithm can help to optimize the way how our customers can think about the purpose of their doing. So that is the first area. And we have first products out, but it will further evolve, and usage of large language models and all these kind of ideas which are currently developed with high speed in the overall global community, this will, I would say, enrich our services.
Which I'm very much interested in, of course, and we're going to talk about right now or a bit later, I don't know, because another product that was actually the precursor of our, I saw an article on your specific software, I think it's called iAssist, is that already also, in addition to the Optimate, an existing piece of software, is that part under development? What does it do, and what role does AI play in that one?
So iAssist is the next evolution of what I've just described by a single part. So with iAssist, we would like to guide the design engineer over the whole process chain with complex components and parts to be designed. So it's beside cutting, it will also include the bending and the welding part. And it is a mixture of, I would say, it's a hybrid development. So first, we take it as a guide of a guidance system for designers. And by being guided, we will learn, on the one hand side, how the sheet metal designer thinks about developing his product. So I think that for us at utmost interest. So how is a design engineer really mm-hmm. thinking about how he would like to come to a solution? So we learn something by guiding him. And on the other side, we take the data to train our models to guide him better. So it's both. It's learning from all the designers using iAssist, and it's giving better guidance by having a trained model. And taking this into, and that is the strategic goal of iAssist, to further develop in the future better machines, because at the end, we would like to provide a solution which is the perfect fit of for the designer designing end products for their customers. So we are on the look on the next generation of machines based on the data we could collect and train with our end customers by iAssist.
Right. And I hear it's maybe also the next phase of designing, I don't know, because, and we're moving in a natural way into, towards the generative AI, I feel, I would say, because you're, and that's very interesting. I read it somewhere that you say, at least today, and you can tell me if that's going to stay like that, if you're going to be able to sell a product like that, but we can come to that as well. So today you're, you know, maybe a handful, I don't know, you can tell us, a handful of customers can use this, and you're looking at, and there's nothing like a free lunch. So for that reason, you want to be able to use the data. Now, the designer, which is an open-minded person, also is maybe not going to continue to what he or she has been doing for 10 or 20 or 30 years, because everything is changing also, of course, for the designer. So that's, I don't know how you see that. I understand there's a couple of questions here. So maybe is already some first feedback from, I don't know how long this you've been working with this, or you just came back from the Hannover Messe, you said, how is this this product, this service being accepted by the designers?
No, I would say it's both. So on the broad range, we are out in the field since almost 3 years with Optimate. iAssist is on a very very pre-development stage. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, that is really the case. It's a change project. Therefore, we decided as Trumpf that we will have a cooperation with the KIT in Karlsruhe, one of the leading institutes, where we will build and open up a living lab. We will have this cooperation for a decade of 10 years together, and they will get our production material. So they will get a cutting machine, a bending machine, and our software and our services that every year the students can design and produce parts in sheet metal, and therefore getting know this new technology, getting trained because it's differently to grinding and milling. So they have to learn and train that things can be solved in sheet metal, because we have learned that most of the designers don't even know the technology by itself. So we go in several instances. We go to the market with Optimate and other systems. Mm-hmm. We go into universities. We will allow this solution for universities to get, I would say, open source. So every university in the world could cooperate with the KIT in this, and also take lessons learned and also set up learning places for students in manufacturing. So we will provide this as a service if interest. So that could be an invitation to all people listening to this podcast. So if you're interested in that, you can connect with us. We are open that all universities or learning campuses around the world are doing this in a certain way, and to learn sheet metal. And lastly, over the time, then collecting data from our customers, because we bring benefit to them, collecting data from the students to build up a better product for the designers, because it is a change project and it will take time.
There's so many topics in here in what we're discussing. I'm not sure where to start first. Data is the other thing. So now when I read about it, I understood, yeah, sure, that's the deal you do with your customers. They can start using it and you can continue to improve by learning from your models, building, I don't know, question, foundation models, other things. So it's about the value of the data. And my question is then going to be, who is the owner, kind of? It's clear who is the owner. Is this kind of process, maybe there's a contract behind it, I don't know, a deal between you can use this and we can use the data. Is that going to continue to be? Is there an option today for you to work like that with your customer? Or do you think it's always going to be like, you know, you give them a value and instead of maybe giving you money, you get, and there we go. Data is a currency in this case, right? You know, they don't pay you for your development, but they do pay you because data is the value of what you get back.
So first of all, I think the basic of everything is trust. And our customers have a strong trust into us. And it is our highest value is the trust, the loyalty of our customers. And I would say that is a top priority. And thanks to the fact that we are family owned, that we invest a lot of the money we could achieve as a result of our working, we get in a refund into our R&D spending. So we have tremendous R&D spending compared to our competitors, thanks to our owners who allow us that. So there is this trust in innovation circles. Therefore, it's a good starting point. And then we have decided that we really transparently communicate with our customers. So if our machines get connected, there are different agreements between serviceability in a basic format and then sharing data on a transparent level that everybody knows that it is shared and it is used to further develop services and products. So I think that was our major milestone, and we achieved it a couple of, 2 years ago, that we bring this out globally, that there is a data transparency contract between our customers and us. And that is a baseline for the future. And in the software, we do it in the same way. If we use a data to improve products, it is transparent and seen. And based on the fact that our products improve, we see a high willingness of our customers to share and to allow the product to get better.
Mm. I do trainings here or there, and I do recall as well that Robert, my co-producer, that he gave this example a couple of years ago, like where there's an instance of where, you know, you go to a coffee bar and they suggest that, well, if I get your, you know, your business card or show me your LinkedIn, then you get a free coffee. And this is kind of on the basis of what you say, your trust relationship with your customers. It's instead of, you know, giving euros back, yeah, they gave you the data back. Very, very interesting. What I'm now looking towards is what you're giving many pieces already is like, who do you see will be providing these kind of industrial AI solutions today in the near future? Is it the new startups? You know, is it whatever? Optimate, I think, is one of your startup. There is an Andrew Wang Landing AI. Those kind of companies, are they going to play an important role? Is it the incumbents, including yourself in your market and the Rockwells, the Bosches, the Siemenses? Who is it? And specifically, what I was thinking of, have you always been providing a design, computer-aided design type of solution? Or is that something where you say, you know, that's a new potential market for us? And does that mean that somebody else is not going to be doing that?
So the answer is always, it's everything. So I would say that first is our objective and our guidance from our top management and from the ownership is we have to constantly grow by a certain percentage, which is in our case close to 10%. And in a market where the market only grows 2% or even lower, you have to have ideas and disrupt yourself. And disruption, I would say there are three things which disrupt yourself. The first is we have the core DNA that we disrupt ourselves. And it is historically, we did punching machines or copy nibbling machines because we had the 100-year celebration last year. So we did, Mr. Trumpf started with copy nibbling machines. And then in his diploma thesis, Professor Leibinger disrupted copy nibbling or nibbling by copy nibbling machines. And then a nibbling by punching and then laser disrupted punching. So we have an internal self-disruption potential and DNA. But it is getting more and more complicated to disrupt us fully. Maybe generative AI is the next full-fledged disruption. I would say yes, could be, but it's still a way to go in investment good industries because we have such a huge brownfield. So it might be the next disruption, or there's a strong hypothesis on it, but it is a long way to go. So first is self-disruption. Second is, because we are one of the leading machine tool builders, we are huge too, where we have more than 1,000 engineers globally. So self-disruption and a global organization is sometimes a change and a challenge. So startups help to disrupt our thinking. And sometimes we carve out startups, and sometimes we take in startups. So both is possible. And it is a very important way to stimulate our disruption, I would say. And now, I would say, now in these really challenging times, we see partnership becoming absolutely more important, and especially with the leading partners of the world. On the university side, for example, we cooperate with the KIT, we cooperate with Sepp Hochreiter, who was also, I think, in one of your podcasts in Linz. So we try to cooperate with the leading institutions and universities in the world to get disrupted by them. And secondly, industry partners. You spoke about Siemens Accelerator, one of our core partners. We have other partners, Microsoft. We try to bring in the best partners into our ecosystem to get speed, to get global reach, to avoid that we design things our partners could provide to bring a solution to our end customers. And not last, but I would say driven, is all by the innovation of our customers, because they are so deeply in the application and they have such a willingness to disrupt themselves. Most of some or a lot of good ideas are also coming out of the strong relationship to our customers, and they disrupt us too.
I was going to ask you about Sepp Hochreiter. Yeah, we did. We did a couple of, actually, we started the series together with Sepp 5 years ago, and we're very, very grateful to Sepp as a friend of the podcast. And he was at your Intech event as well. And he said it's not necessarily about building the best machine today, but about building things around it. Now, how does that relate to, I assume, building on the things you just shared with us already, for you making sure you're going to continue to be the leading supplier of AI solutions in your industry?
So, because Sepp is an unbelievable thought leader in AI, but as a machine tool builder, I would say a precise and perfectly produced machine is an asset too, and it will always be. So, sure. Even with software, you cannot do a wrongly designed and produced machine becomes not perfect just by software. That is, I think, that is our best asset for the future. Right. So autonomous production, when we will deliver machines which have the ambition to be autonomous produced, or to deliver the outcome of autonomously produced parts in cutting, bending, and welding. That is the North Star. And we think that you need the perfect machine, perfectly produced, high quality parts, perfect mechatronic system, and then you need from partners globally, from the talents of the world, the perfect match of a software and a service. And these will be based on the logic how products are done in software, and specifically in generative AI software pieces of the future. These will be things we will share around the globe, because we will never have the financial power to do our own ground-based model. It's simply just possible with a 3 billion world leader in machine tools cannot afford, I don't know, a 10 billion a large language model foundation be financed. It's economically, manpower-wise, talent-wise, there is a mismatch. And that we have to acknowledge. We have to understand it, that it is co-creation, it's partnership for the future to provide the best solution for our industry. And that is where the beauty of the concept will come up.
Let's stay for a moment with that. I love the direction of the autonomous production. I am very closely related and do presentations on the very topic. I'm a strong believer in it, especially because since a couple of years, we see this as a chance, as we don't, in many parts, at least of the Western world, we can't find people, employees to do the thing. But let's stay for a moment with the models. Can you say a little bit about models then, foundation models, language models? I mean, you don't need to build them yourselves, right? I mean, they exist in open source. And if I recall of what it is that you shared with our listeners of the OPC Foundation podcast, you are a very open-minded company specifically interested in open source as well, right?
Yeah, so we will have both. So we will have open source as one of the inspiring, I would say, foundations of the product of the future, but we will also have specifically customized solutions for industrial applications. And therefore, we will have partners which will leverage themselves on open source, but they will also customize it to our purpose. Because one of the critical items on open source is, or it's not critical, but you have to take the management and the opportunity of managing these parts of software deliveries is we sign a contract with our customers, I would say, for decades. The machines that we deliver to our customers, they run for 15, 20, even sometimes 30 years. Mm-hmm. And they go into a very strong commitment with us. And we have to ensure that whatever we provide to the market can produce parts over decades. And that is where I would say also the idea of startups, the idea of high flexibility, high agile setups becomes in a natural conflict of interest, and that we have to manage. And therefore, I would say it's we will have partners which will customize these solutions which are provided openly in open source to our purposes, because we are in a trustful relationship. For example, it could be a provider of robotics. We are dealing with the leading robot manufacturers globally, because a robot and a machine has to perfectly interact, but we will never produce robots. We will take them and we will orchestrate them into our systems. And it will be the same with vision. We developed vision systems by ourselves a decade ago. We will not do this any further. So in the future, we will have partnerships, global partnerships with companies providing perfect vision systems, including specific vision AI submodels, for example. So I think that is the product structure of a machine tool builder will change more into an orchestrator of partners. And in the past, it was supplier relationships and integrated. And now it is more developing in, I would say, stringent management of systems engineering, including partners to provide solutions. That is the new normal in machine tools.
Very good. Let's see that what it is that is going to come out of your company in relation to Gen AI, maybe language models. Maybe by the time that we broadcast this podcast, we will have heard more from Sepp and his NX AI and his X LSTM as an alternative to transformers as well. Actually, when I was looking on your website for specifically AI solutions, I didn't see the word artificial intelligence. I'm not sure that I looked correctly, but maybe the assumption then was that, you know, your customers, and you talked about the long-term relationships, the trust, maybe they're less interested in, let's say, hype words like AI or Gen AI for what it's worth, and maybe they're more interested in, and knowing that you give them the solutions that they need.
I would say that is a perfect summary. And our customers rely on the machines and the services we provide, and the how is up to us. And for sure, in our internal communication, in our internal project, there's a lot of AI on all level, in all different areas of vision, of software, of strategies. Maybe one very famous example, and we also brought it to different prices already, is in one of our machines, the True Laser Center 7030, we implemented AI-based retry algorithms so that if the sorting of a part fails, we retry it, and it's not programmed in advance. It's based on an AI-based software model. These technologies we will hand over to different applications and sorting in the near future. So we are looking to bring something new on one of our next. You mentioned the intake at the beginning of our podcast, and maybe we can look in the future. There will be the Europlech. It's this year in Hanover again. It is the world leading area of all machine tool builders and sheet metal, which come every 2 years to Hanover again, and will present their latest technologies. And we plan to bring there some new products with AI inside, I would call it. And we will bring it as a highlight. This we have to discuss with marketing and communications. Mm-hmm. But you can be sure that whatever we call it, it will be inside the machine.
Sounds great. I've been working for Intel and bringing this idea of the AI inside to the market a couple of years ago. So I'm looking forward to it. Before we're going to close off, there's one topic that is a little bit offside maybe, but I think it's a great example of what you call your core DNA of disruption. It's about the paper part. I think you did, you presented about that as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the paper part, what it is, and maybe if already now or in the future, AI can or does play a role in that as well?
As a paper part, we have decided as a company that there are three different possibilities to go to the market with a product. So there's a classical one, somebody buys a machine and we support him with service. There's a second one, which is the lease and financing. Trumpf has a bank, so you can lease and get a machine financed in a classical way. And there's a third pillar, which is a pay-per-part outcome-driven servicization business model, where you get the machine into your site. It is financed over the payment of each part produced, and there are several AI-assisted systems inside. Mm-hmm. So one of the first one is you start this business model that you upload a part in the cloud and you get a price indication from us what this part will be cost if you produce it on your machine in your site autonomously. And that is the first part. So there is a prediction of the manufacturing cost if it is produced. Then you decide, okay, I produce that part on the outcome-driven machine of the Trumpf in my site, and then it gets produced. And it goes to the 7030, which is a machine which has AI inside. It cuts a part, it sorts it, and it delivers it to a storage where you can take out the part. So there's the next level of AI. And because we give a guarantee that the part is produced in quality, we have to remotely control the machine. And we have a small, like the NASA in the United States, but it's very, very small. We have a remote control center in Saxony. A couple of people work there, and they remotely control our paper part machines in the market by looking if the part is not produced. There are a certain percentage of failures on the machine can be remotely solved. And if that is possible, we solve them remotely. If that's not the case, then we have to call the customer and say, okay, here's the remote control center of your machine. You have a problem on your shop floor. Please, can you assist? And then there is a guidance tool to assist the physical operator at our customer, who then solves this problem, and then he presses the restart button and production goes on. And this is, I would say, once in the world. So no other machine tool business provider in sheet metal has a solution. It's a new business model. We have it with a very low number of customers, but it is in the world and the customers produce, but it's a complete mindset change of the industry. So we will see where this will go in the future.
So one add-on question to where this could go regards to your customers. Could it potentially mean, I'm just thinking way forward now, let's mention a global retailer of, let's say they produce a metal chair. Let's just say IKEA, you know, everybody knows the brand. Could it be that maybe at some point in time, IKEA would become your customer? You know, now today they don't build, but maybe they say, I order, you know, 10,000 chairs of steel per year. Could they become your customer?
So I would say they can become the customers of our customers, because right. We will not do, and that is one of the major strategic decisions we did with PaperPart, and maybe that is a good, is we don't want to do the business of our customers. So it is enabling our customers to produce the perfectly produced part at their site on our machines, but close to autonomously, because it's complex to produce autonomously, but we will not do. The other side around could be that we become sheet metal producers, but that we don't right. want to be, because 80% of our current customers are family-owned businesses, and we would like to enable and ensure that all our customers are getting the digital leading machine or sheet metal producers in the future in their size, because they are up to 50 people all over globally, or between 50 and 100 people. 80% of our customers are family owned and small, distributed all over in the world. And with this kind of business model innovation, with the use of AI, they can become digital leading at scale, but being small.
Very good. Thank you very much for this important clarification. Now let's come to a close. I would normally ask, and you can still comment on, you know, how you think that all the things you've been saying is going to change the world of metal bending, cutting, welding over the next couple of years. You have already shared your North Star of autonomous production, which I think is really wonderful. Feel free to further comment on that. Or alternatively, because we did not really yet, share with us what it is that you learned the last couple of days at the Hannover Messe with regards to industrial AI.
So maybe it is perfectly linked together, because what I've learned and what I see is that the use of AI is one of the biggest enabler and booster of a change in the industry in all directions. It will change the way our customers will do their business, meaning there will be web shops, they will get orders differently, they will produce and interact with their customers differently. So I have seen a lot of tools and a speed up SAP or small ERP systems or Microsoft. They so many speeding up products for their customers, which will enable manufacturing business to be faster, to be more efficient, to be paperless. So there's a change in the customer world. There will be a change on our side in all organizations. Sales will go differently. R&D is heavily changed by Copilot, by re-engineering of software code, by changing how you design parts. So I mentioned it for our customers, for designing sheet metal parts, but it's also designing simulation, pre-developing machines of the future. This will change. And all the things we have talked about in theory on systems engineering in the last 15 years, it's there. It's usable. Mm-hmm. You can take it. You have to change the way how you design your products, how you produce them, how you steer your production, how you build up your logistic supply chain. So that is, I'm really fascinated about the speed of change of all these ways. And I'm looking forward to how to change with my people, with my teams, and adapt to the speed of the market driven by generative AI in a software package. And lastly, so it is our customers, it's our how we change our principles to do business in engineering and service testing and validation. And then for sure, the overall product structure, the way how we design complex systems in the future, how we build up solutions for our customers, what the different layers of use of software from the real base of the machine itself with the NCK, PLC, HMI to supporting software to supporting services, all is in change and it is rapid. That is what fascinated me most in the last week or in the days at the Hanover Fair is it's so fast. It has nothing to do with the things we have seen 6 months before. And that is new. I would say I have not seen it before. And that gives me a huge challenge with my teams globally to react on that. But it's a challenge with a huge opportunity for our customers.
Tom, thank you very much. Change as the only constant, as I hear it, and as you mentioned before, with towards autonomous production as your North Star. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts, your experiences, your ideas of where you as a company will be moving with and around industrial AI. Listeners that want to get in contact with you, I believe it's best to do that through LinkedIn. You can, of course, always go directly to the Trumpf website. Otherwise, if you have any comments, questions, as always, please feel free to send me a short email, peter@ipod.de. Very happy that you stay with us so far. And Tom, thank you very much for your time and good luck.
So thanks very much and looking forward to get some followers and to exchange on the way how we will build machines for a better world and a sustainable world. And that's where we have to take the advantage of the methods we get. Thank you very much for getting the opportunity to share my views on that.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye, Tom.
Bye.